Hello and welcome to the Everyday Journey podcast. I'm your host, Vasily Mazin, coming at you from New York City. The idea behind this project is to interview people who are outstanding in their field, one way or another. The theme will undoubtedly emerge on its own as we go along on this journey, casting a spotlight on one character at a time. My very first guest of the inaugural podcast episode is a musician, a songwriter, a communication technology professional, and all around a lovely guy. He is part of the blossoming darkwave band called Inhalt, where he plays a variety of synthesizers and also writes and sings. Philip is educated as an audio engineer and has been a music devotee for a long time. He is also a great friend and someone whose company I always enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Mr. Philip Vinegar.
Thank you.
How was my introduction, Philip?
Did I miss
anything important?
No, I think that was fantastic. You're putting me in a very good light. I feel very honored, and I'm very honored to be the first guest on your podcast.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. And so there's a little bit of pressure on you.
Of course there is. There always is.
Okay, so let's go right into it. And tell me, how did you start as a musician?
You know, I mean, that has been something that I was always fascinated by already as a kid. Technically, I would suppose I started by learning the trumpet at the age of 9, forcefully, somewhat. I didn't like it, but I always appreciated how music was put together. So I spent then just a lot of time doing research and experimentation and, you know, just finding my way. It was kind of a passion that it got me deeper and deeper into it, just by chance. So yeah, that's kind of the start on that.
Okay. And did you consider yourself a musician in the beginning, or was it just kind of an organic, slow process of becoming one?
You know, honestly, I never considered myself a musician. I just considered myself a person that was interested in this. I guess you could call me a musician, but a musician for me is somebody who has some training in this, and a lot of what I do is self-taught.
You do have some training, though, related to audio. So tell me about your education and how you made that choice to learn what you did.
I was always a big fan of combining music and technology, which I believe are two different schools entirely. Technology always fascinated me because I was always in control of what the machine can do. So I technically appreciated the approach to that. But what really got me fascinated by is how to apply this technical knowledge, if you will, to an art form, how to make it descriptive in a sense. And I was always fascinated by film, by installation art, by music, electronic music in particular, because it marries together technology with art, with music. And so I studied audio engineering because I felt that was the closest that I can get to combining an art form in itself, but with a lot of technical understanding and background with achieving that. Sort of like painting, sculptures and pictures, but using frequencies and sounds. So that's how I kind of, you know, got into that.
A very rich picture you've painted, but how about a bit more specific? Where'd you go to school and what'd you study?
So I went to school at SAE, the School of Audio Engineering in Zurich, Switzerland. I'm from Switzerland, I found that school actually through a friend of mine. I was doing sort of I finished my mandatory schooling and doing sort of a gap year and not really sure what I wanted to do in life. And, you know, all those things that you have as a young person or young adult, if you will.
As a lost teenager.
Not so much a lost. To be honest with you, I was never really lost because I kind of knew exactly what I wanted to do. I just did not know how to approach that. And so SAE seemed like the right choice because it was an institute that was geared for exactly that.
If I'm not mistaken, I think you told me that you had sort of an expectation from your father to take a certain route in education and you compromised somehow and got support from your family, even though they, from what I remember, they didn't really think that studying audio was the best choice.
I guess they expected more of a linear, you know, sort of life, right? Where, you know, my parents don't really come from a very artistic sort of background. They are very sort of logical, you know, people, in a sense. So they didn't really understand why I would make this choice to do to learn a profession that is so up and down and is so unclear, and maybe you make it, maybe you don't, and you know, they just expected more of a, why don't you just study, you know, finance, and then you'll have a good job and you'll be okay in life, you'll be able to carry yourself and all those kind of things. And I just wasn't interested in that, so I guess the misunderstanding came from, you know, my rebellious self deciding to, you know, I'm going to, you know, do something completely different. I'm going to follow my passion. I have a dream. I really want to do this. And, you know, one day I guess I will make it, you know, this and that. And of course, you know, there was a strong amount of support behind that, but initially they just didn't really understand it, I suppose.
Right. And were they supportive of your choice?
Oh yes, yeah. They were very supportive of my choice. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so which leads me, you mentioned about the fact that you grew up in Switzerland. I want to ask you, what was it like to grow up in Switzerland? Not that you are experienced growing up elsewhere, you know, but what do you think is different about growing up in Switzerland versus the States or some other part of the world?
I would say, you know, Switzerland is a very it's a very wealthy country, right? So I mean, we had, you know, access and you know, access to things. We had access to material things. We had television. We had MTV. You know, we had all of those things. But there was a strong sort of disconnect into sort of letting yourself go with that. And I kind of appreciated that a lot, especially now looking back. Into, okay, you know, you limit your amount of time of TV that you can consume, you know, a half hour a day or something like that. And there's a lot of emphasis in, you know, going outside, going outdoors, doing things, going skiing, going for a hike and enjoying nature. And so I spent a lot of time, you know, outside being active and doing things. I think, however, though, you know, Switzerland is a society that is, you know, very, very logical, very precise, very, very sort of pragmatic in that sort of approach. And me as a, my character is more of a free living, you know, maybe and this and that, and kind of like a free will kind of person. So as I grew older, I felt more and more in this cage of, I need to break free, and I need to get out of this, you know, logical linearness of life. You know, you grow up, you learn a good profession, you have a good job, you know, you get settled down, you have a family, and you know, these are the logical steps that the average person would take. Now, you know, I didn't grow up in a big city. I grew up, you know, outside of a city. So I suppose if I would have grown up in a big city, there might have been a little bit of a different emphasis, you know, onto how to sort of carve out your life. But yeah,
I see. So I guess what's interesting for me here is that you live in San Francisco right now, right, in California. You've lived there for several years now, and a lot of people who are not born here and choose to come here, they do it because they look for significant improvement in most of areas of their lives, and especially financial, right? It's a job market that is more fruitful, more promising here for people who come from third world or something like that. But you've come for, in a way, something different, and also some of the same thing some of the same things that this country can offer, and that is being free in your search, in your path, right, and being a little bit entrepreneurial about your life. Is it fair to say that you've come for that?
It's fair to say that, yes. I mean, you're completely right. I didn't come here to, you know, make a lot of money and you know, get a you know, good job in specific field. I came here because I wanted to break away. I wanted to see how is it on the other side. You know, sometimes growing up in Switzerland, maybe to go back a little bit to that question, we are somewhat of a little bit in a bubble, in a sense, where we have it extremely good. And sometimes we don't realize, or a lot of people don't realize, how good we actually have it. So I sort of wanted to go out into the world and you know, kind of see a different perspective on that. And I chose San Francisco because I had been here a few times. And from historically coming from here, San Francisco was so wildly different in its approach in every single way. It was, you know, you can walk outside as you can be crazy, you can be naked, you can scream and yell, and nobody really says anything, you know, against that. And for me, that was such a refreshing, welcoming, you know, difference coming from a very, you know, strict sort of linear society, in a sense, that I felt very, wow, I can do anything I want here, in a sense, you know, like I'm young, I have you know, aspirations, I have a huge passion, I guess I'm somewhat smart, I can figure things out, but I felt, you know, sort of, okay, I'm now in a totally different environment where it's up and down and crazy. You can do kind of whatever you want to do, and now is your chance. Now try to do that and run after that.
Yeah, I can see how you retained your culture, you know, applied it onto a new framework. You know, you kind of mix those together, right? Because both places are Western, right? You grew up in the West, so to speak, right? And here's also the West, but very different versions of it. And like I know you, you know, I've known you for a while, so I know you definitely remain being Swiss in many of your private ways, you know, but you also enjoy being outgoing in an American way.
And exactly, and I think that's the point, because, you know, by leaving my you know, home and what I was used to and everything, by going away from that, I started to realize that actually I kind of missed that. And maybe that's, I kind of found myself in that sense where I identified, well, I do like certain things this way and I like it like that. And that's interesting. So for me, it was a very personal, I got to know myself really, really well. So you're right. It's both West, you know, we all have, you know, products, we can buy jeans, we can do all these things that we do. But I think here it's in a more loud and crazy way. And I think that's what fascinated me so much, about that, is where I could be vocal about these things. Yeah. Where sometimes I felt, at home, I couldn't, I was restricted.
So speaking of being vocal, my perfect segue skills. So what is Inhalt?
Inhalt is a band that I got together with a good friend of mine as well, my music partner, and we formed a band.
What's his name?
Mattia.
So you met in San Francisco, and
that's right.
You formed a band that, how would you describe?
Musically?
Yes.
Inhalt is, I would say, kind of a cross between new wave, synth pop, a lot of dark wave, maybe influence in there, electronic dance music in a sense, but with a heavy, strong emphasis on vocal performance, in a sense.
So, and what the hell is dark wave?
Dark wave is kind of a derivative of new wave. Dark wave, correct me if I'm wrong, has its kind of history in the late 70s, early 80s, but it kind of was born out of goth, you know, darker approaches to new wave music, which was generally more pop driven. And I think Inhalt kind of combines those two together in a somewhat playful, but also in a more of a thought after way.
Yeah, my impression that the word dark in this style sort of implies that it's a bit more serious, a bit more, not sinister, but it's a bit more kind of minor chords, I guess, and a little bit maybe politically charged because there's like dark clouds above us and stuff like that, where New Wave was a bit more happy and a bit more easier to digest for just anyone, right? I think Dark Wave is a little bit more niche kind of music.
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it comes a lot from like punk. You know, if you combine anarchy, punk, you know, that was kind of the approach to anti-establishment and, you know, let's break everything down and destroy things. And you know, punk was a very strong sort of antidote to the boy meet girl, sort of themed music that you would hear on the radio. And I think Dark Wave is kind of a continuation of that.
So who listens to Dark Wave? Are there like big groups around the world, the big scenes?
There is a fairly large scene around the world. Yeah, I mean, you know, I would probably have to say early 2000s, there was kind of a resurrection of this sort of music. And it was kind of then more and more combined into synthesizer-driven kind of approaches. But I would say the past 15 years, that certainly has generated a large following of, you know, young generations who are searching for something different.
All right. So tell me about the music production process in the studio.
Mattia and I, my music partner and I, we are very fascinated by equipment, by technology. And we have sort of identified with using more software-driven instruments, such as computers and laptops, is that we're missing a lot of the playfulness. We're missing a lot of the organic, real approach. So, you know, not to say anything negative about, you know, using computers and software and all that kind of stuff. I mean, by all means, we use computers as well, just in a different way. We just didn't like the interface of sitting in front of a screen and moving your mouse and, you know, interfacing with it that way. So we also, being kind of connoisseurs of vintage synthesizers, you know, we have a large collection. We have, you know, since we were teenagers, we've had huge, you know, inspiration of Synthesizer X, you know, Moog or Arp or, you know, whatever, to name a couple of names. So we try to approach it in that way, where we are very fortunate enough to have a lot of these instruments at our disposal. We've actually just completed building another studio not far away from here, where we have everything connected and ready to go. But the approach is every different synthesizer has a different sound, much like, you know, a Yamaha violin will sound very different to a Stradivarius, or, you know, a Taylor guitar will sound different to, you know, Fender or, you know, whatever. So we've kind of identified what instruments give us the sound that we like and sort of put our attention into using those. And so we use a lot of different flavors of these instruments in our sound. But we to come back to kind of like how we approach making music, we do everything sort of on the fly, in a sense. We'll get together, we'll say like, okay, I have an idea for a melody, which I think is great. I have a chord progression, which I think is interesting. You know, and then one of us will say, okay, that's interesting. Play that maybe on a Jupiter 8 synthesizer, because I like the sound of the filters, the oscillators and whatnot. And then, you know, my partner will bring up another synth and play a bass line. And so we kind of go from there. A lot of it has to do with playing. That's kind of our emphasis.
So if you could wave a magic wand and transform a synthesizer into a girlfriend, which one would it be?
Let me get this right. You're asking me if I could wave a magic wand and one of the synthesizers would become a girlfriend. Is that what you're saying? Like human?
Right. Which one of them would you marry?
That's a very good question. I would probably have to say a synthesizer called the Prophet 5, made by a company called Sequential.
Prophet 5 by Sequential would make a perfect girlfriend.
Yes, that would make the perfect girlfriend.
She would have to learn how to cook, though.
That's okay.
She doesn't need to. As long as she makes those sweet sounds.
Yes, exactly. That's the approach. You know, with the Prophet 5, which was a classic, analog synthesizer. Actually, it was the first polyphonic synthesizer with memory from the Bay Area. Widely used, of course, but the Prophet has a certain silkiness to its sound that no other synthesizer really gives you, and you can really subtly play with that. And so, yeah, that's I guess the traits that I would be looking for in a partner.
Silky and playful.
Silky and playful. Yes, exactly. Yeah, just beautiful. You know,
just beautiful. Okay, that's not a lot to ask. But I guess in the world of synthesizers, that's.
But yeah. the key is there is an off button.
Yes. So that's an analog one, right? It's not a digital one. It's a very old one.
It's analog. Yes. Yeah. With digital memory, right? So it was the first instrument to have what was called the Z80 processor made by Motorola in the late 70s. So all the parameters which are analog, electricity, are then via DA conversion converted. AD analog digital into digital information that can be stored in a memory, which was a very very unique thing at that time when that came out.
Awesome. Okay, so you sing in your band and you write lyrics as well for the songs. So how do you write your lyrics? And you sing in German. So, yeah, tell me about the process of coming up with the words and whether you kind of try to put some message in there. And why do you choose German over English? That's a bit of a loaded question.
Well, we can maybe take this into different segments here, but, Inhalt means contents in German, like the contents of a book or the contents, in a bottle or something like that. And we believe that in our modern society where we are in and how we're all living is that we're putting a lot of emphasis on to how everything looks like around us, but not what is in the core. One perfect example is that, when you post pictures on Facebook, it all looks glamorous and beautiful and everybody is jealous and thinks, oh, you have such a fantastic life. But in reality, you're sitting at home just making it look very nice. So that to me is a message of saying that there is no content. So Inhalt is kind of an answer to that in a sense. Obacht, Gefahr. Das BKA. Datenschutz. Wir haben unsere Daten da. Blaues Licht. Die Polizei ist da. Straßen dicht. Sie kam und sah. Was wollen Sie von mir? So a lot of our songs have to do with this sort of alienation of being disconnected from what is reality, in a sense. Like, for example, we have one song called Panopticon, and a panopticon is kind of like an inverted jail in a sense. Where if you look at like a traditional jail, you have a jail cell and the inmate is in the cell and the warden goes by, but you're relatively private in there. Nobody's really watching you. So psychologically you can kind of, run away into yourself. And a panopticon is the opposite of that, where the inmate is put into the center and is constantly being watched. But the difference is the inmate does not know that you're being watched. So psychologically, you're in a constant state of fear. And we believe that, not just currently, but in the last 50, 60, 70, maybe 80 years, we've all kind of been living in a panopticon of not knowing, are we being watched or are we not being watched? So we're all psychologically very tense about that. So that's one example. There's a lot of elements in that song that I've kind of put together for that.
Okay.
10, um die Wahrheit zu sehen. Meine Seele ist hier, doch mein Körper ist weg. Kein Bezug auf mich, werde ich entfernt.
There's another tune that we just composed, which is coming out in a couple of months. It's called Alles, and that means everything.
Momentan ist alles klar, ohne Grund denke ich, keine Sorgen, das ist wahr. Ich suche meinen Sinn, tiefer schaue ich rein, durch die Zeilen kann es sein, dunkle Flecken überall.
So in that song, I kind of talk a lot about how you can have everything, but you have nothing, in a sense. So what do you really have? What is really you? What is really, what makes you? I don't want to look at you on your, you know, social media profiles. I want to talk to you and figure out who you really are as a person. So that's kind of the backstory to a lot of our, you know, methodology that goes behind that. But we don't really do it in a you know, shouting, sinister, anarchist approach. We do it more in a playful way, kind of a gentle reminder of, hey, put your smartphone away when you go to a bar and talk to your friend. Or, you know, there's a cute girl sitting over there that you like, you know, walk up to her, say a few things. That's kind of what we're trying to imply a lot with our tunes. And I mean, to come back to your last part of that question, why in German? You know, I grew up in Switzerland. I grew up in the German part of Switzerland. So, you know, German is kind of my native language in a sense. And that kind of just came up in a whim. I mean, Mattia and I, we got together. We made a song and quite remarkably, we could make a song instantaneously. I mean, within an hour, we had a whole tune ready, which was, you know, I've never experienced that before with a music partner. So I just tended to just kind of hum along, you know, melodies in my head that I would just kind of whistle or hum along, you know, with my voice. And then so eventually it was like, all right, Philip, you sing. Try it, you know, give it a shot. So it was really my music partner that brought that out of me. You know, for me, it was more,
it was decided on the spot. Like, you never had an aspiration to be a stage performer with a microphone.
Not at all. No, not at all. That was the least, the last thing that was in my head. It was really my partner that said, no, you should do this. You should go out and sing in German. So, you know, I decided to, okay, well, I'll do it in a language that is easiest for me to do. I mean, imagine, you know, you're American, you grew up in California, and now you live in South America somewhere, and your Spanish is kind of okay, and you can kind of get along and stuff like that. And now suddenly somebody says, okay, you sing. You know, you would naturally say, okay, well, then I'll sing in English because that's my easiest language that will come to me. You know, I'm still learning Spanish. So, you know, standing on stage and singing in broken, poor Spanish is kind of embarrassing.
Right. It's like you put yourself in the position of strength when you use what you know best, right? And you stand out. Like, if you sing in English as a native speaker in you know, Colombia or something like that, people will look at you and will not question whether or not your English is good, because it's going to be like just pure perfection from their perspective, at least, right? Kind of like you can command your native language, German, masterfully, like no one else could in California on stage while playing Darkwave, you know. So that's definitely, you play into your strength here, right? But I think it also adds a flavor, right? I think there's something about the German language that it's not a part of everyday pop music, you know. I think we hear, especially in the States, we hear a lot more Spanish as a second language. Maybe we'll hear a French song, like Edith Piaf or something like that, right? But there are very few German songs that people could, you know, randomly hear at a cafe or something like that. I mean, not that your music would be played at a cafe, which would be nice. But I think there's a kind of subtext from recognizing the language, and most people will not know what you're singing about, right? Especially here. But there's something about it that I don't know how I would describe it, but it makes it all the more serious, you know, in the music.
I think, you know, German is a very edgy sort of language. There's a lot of corners and, you know, 90 degree turning points just sonically. And I think that works really well with this kind of synthesizer, minimal, you know, edgy kind of sounds. So a lot of it has to do with it's another instrument on top of it to sort of complement this edgy, you know, edgy grooves, rhythms, very, very short bass lines and stuff like that. But yes, correct. I mean, it is very, very unique. I mean, you know, and funnily enough, you know, for example, in Germany, from my experience, it is extremely hard to produce music in German and become recognized and famous in German. There are very few people that that have gotten to do that. So in Germany, a lot of, you know, early bands, people wouldn't even think to sing in German. They would naturally gravitate to English or, you know, something else that sounds sonically more appealing to the ear. So yeah, it is, it's daring. It's very daring, I would say.
I know you have some introverted tendencies as a person. I mean, you're outgoing, you're very social, when you want to be, but you also value your private time and space. So when you're put up on stage under a spotlight to perform, does it feel like a natural place to be? Did you have to work towards getting used to it, or do you separate those, like, acting on stage from your actual character?
Yeah, that's very well put, Vasily. I have, obviously, I like to be alone. I like to have my time. I like to sort of, you know, tinker around with you know, music and stuff like that. That's usually done, you know, privately and not in much contact with other people. But yes, you're right. I for me, going on stage is more like, okay, I flip a switch in my head and I go, okay, now I'm acting. Now I have a character, and this character I have to portray and you know, run with it. And for me, it is just pure fun. I mean, I have a lot of fun doing this. I remember the first time I did it. And maybe it's, you know, I've had some experience. I was touring with a comedy duo in the early part of my life, but you know, touring, I was the front of house engineer. I was doing more technical stuff, but I had a big approach to how to act on stage. So I learned a lot that way on how to switch yourself and you go, okay, now it's performance time in a sense. So I remember the first time when with Inhalt, when we had a show and, you know, we're playing the first gig and, you know, we're all nervous and, you know, this and that. For me, that nervousness never really surfaced because I was just like, okay, yeah, great. Yeah, all right, stage, cool. Okay, perfect lights. You know, you go into your character and you just hope for the best in a sense. but it takes a lot of energy and a lot of preparation beforehand to get to that level. You know, that involves a lot of meditation, going into yourself and calmness and, of course, fitness. You know, a lot of this for me is also it's a workout in a sense. You know, so you have to, you know, eat the right foods, drink a lot of water, you know, go for a swim, do some sport or, you know, whatever, clear your mind. And then you're at your fullest and ready to perform. And then you just form into this character and you go out and you present it.
Yeah, that makes sense. You have to sort of, I mean, you jump into it fairly readily, but it requires some preparation and adjustment. I'm sure you get better with time, but it's not something you want to necessarily, like, recover from. Like, do you take a recovery time after a performance? Do you just want to hide away, or do you feel energized that you've just had a show?
You know, when you play a show like that, there's a lot of adrenaline that goes through your body. And I naturally get high on that. That's my natural high. So I am very energized. I'm very, you know, alert. It sort of puts me into a spot where after playing a show a couple of days later, I have an immense amount of energy. Yes, it certainly does energize me.
Now, you also make your own music, as a solo producer, what's your take on collaboration versus working on your own? Music styles differ quite drastically when you in the band versus by yourself. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think the biggest fear about making electronic music, or the biggest downside, if I may say, is that, you know, you can have five musicians that are fantastic, but they will never play together. They will always, do it themselves, because with the technology, synthesizers and, you know, recording interface and all that kind of stuff, it is kind of geared and sort of made for you to do it individually, to do it yourself. You can stop whenever you want. You can start it. You can change it. You can move it. You can let the instrument, you know, take you into space, or, you know, whatever you have to do, but you always sort of do it for yourself. And in my early, career, if I may say, I never understood how to make music with other people, because I accepted that that was the norm, that you just make it yourself. You have a studio, a couple of synthesizers, you know, you have recording machine, whatever, but you would never do it with anybody else. And that broke when I met my music partner, who kind of taught me and said, like, well, you know, you take that kind of approach, right, where you're focused on you know, creating the sound you want, on putting together the chords that you like and that kind of stuff. But how about if I'm next to you playing a bass line with you? And that sort of blew my mind. That's when I realized that, yes, of course, that's the key, because music traditionally is always done together. It's always done with various musicians, and the reason being is because each instrument is designed and built for what it does, right? I mean, a trumpet does not sound like a bass guitar, and a bass guitar, you cannot get it to sound like a flute. So you need somebody who, okay, you play bass, you play drums, you play flute, you play this, you play that, and then you all practice and have your segments that you play. The difference is the piano in that constellation, because the piano allows you to write every single component of the song. You can write the bass, you can write the melody, you can write the chorus, you can write the, you have all of the frequencies in the spectrum in one instrument. And with synthesizers, that's totally different, because there you can have one synthesizer that can basically do everything. It can sound like the trumpet part, or it can do the guitar, or it can do the bass, it can do the drums and all that kind of stuff. So you never are forced to find people, you know, where you go, okay, I need a drummer. I need to find some drums. You know, I can't do it with my instrument that I have here. And you never really have that sort of approach with electronic music, or at least that's what I thought, until I met my music partner, and we sort of, I started to realize that, you can take this approach of, you know, you're very good at this instrument and you're very good at that instrument. Now program the synthesizer to do that, like the bass line. I will program it to do a melody line, and now we'll play together. And that adds just a completely different dynamic. But it is very, very hard to find that, I would say.
You'll never be alone as long as you have your Prophet 5 as your girlfriend.
That's right. I'll never be alone. Yes. Yeah. But again, there's an on and off switch. So sometimes I can just be like, okay, off.
Because it's absolutely necessary once in a while. Do you have any stories about positive impact that your music made on people, on fans, listeners?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the biggest inspirations that I have, or the resonances that I've got. For example, there was one guy, we played a show in LA just recently. It was a great show. You know, we had a great time. We love playing down there, by the way. It's a great environment. I like being there. And this, younger kid, I mean, maybe 20 years old, 19, 20 years old, 21, something like that. He comes up to me after the show, and he comes up to me and he goes like, I have found what I want to do in life. And, you know, I go, okay, that's wonderful. Congratulations. And he goes, I want to be a German teacher. I've brought my German teacher with me, and she was there too. And I bought your music in the store, and I fell in love with German, the language, and I started to learn it. And now I want to go pursue a career in being a German teacher. And for me, that was, you know, a moment of, wow, okay. I had
unexpected turn. Yeah.
Completely unexpected. I had no idea that, you know, like, you know, music for me is just something I love doing. It's what I love to do. Like, some people love to, go off for walks or do art or, you know, do all kinds of other things. But to have somebody come back to you and say, what you love to do has inspired me to become what I want to do, which is a beautiful moment, I think.
How do you combine your day job and your music career? Would you prefer to change the balance in your music versus day job? And maybe tell us a little bit about what you do for a living.
Yeah, not at all, actually. I mean, in music, it is such a, kind of like up and down industry. I highly recommend to anybody, an aspiring musician or not, is to have a day job, to have another form of income, because it'll make your life so much easier if you know bills are paid, you can live properly, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Sometimes we or people in music, they get kind of stuck in this sort of rhythm of, you know, I hate my job, and if only I could become, you know, rich and famous, and I want to make it and whatever. Not everybody, but there are a lot of, you know, people that sometimes can get stuck into that. And so what I did myself, I sort of looked at that and said early on, okay, how do I marry that? How do I bridge that together? You know, I never want to be in a position where I have a day job, and I don't really like the term day job, because I find that it's kind of a little bit derogatory. How do I translate my passion into what I do for a living outside of music? And so I, you know, having a degree in audio engineering, I fell into IT work in my mid-20s through a friend of mine, and it was highly beneficial for me, because I started to learn about business and how business works and how corporations operate and how things work. And being fascinated by technology in itself, computers seemed very close, because it's kind of the same thing. It's signal flow, in a sense, that goes back and forth. So I sort of fell in love with handling that, and saw the similarities with creating electronic music as opposed to managing servers and databases and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's maybe a little bit drier. It's not as creative, but it's a very similar kind of métier in a sense. But through that, I fell then into audiovisual integration work, designing conferencing systems and managing that, and project management, and running into that sort of field. So being in San Francisco, there's, you know, high emphasis on tech companies here, and where that is needed. That is a skill that is required. And I was quite honored and was like, okay, well, this is great. You know, sure, of course, let's try it. So my day job, in parentheses, is I'm an audiovisual systems engineer, in a sense, for a tech company, and I get to go everywhere in the world to all of our remote sites. I get to work with our IT project management team and deciding and building what conferencing systems are we going to use, what rooms are we going to build. And on top of that, I also, you know, there are a lot of events that happen with these companies. There are a lot of talks, there are a lot of, you know, all hands and all that kind of stuff, which is kind of like a theater performance in a sense. I mean, it's very dry and very, very, you know, non-performance oriented, but on a technical level, it's still mics, it's still broadcasting, it's still, you know, mixing boards and stuff like that. So I get to work with that on a daily basis. So for me, I have kind of made my hobby into my job, where I love what I do. When I wake up in the morning, I'm very inspired, and I go through my calendar and go like, okay, great. Okay, we're going to work on this. There's a new that. I'm, you know, designing a new profile for a DSP processor, or there's an event at 4 o'clock where they need microphones. Cool. Okay, we'll organize that. They need it recorded. Okay, awesome. Brilliant. Oh, let's go to this conference. There's a new, you know, VC technology that's coming out. And those kind of things. And then I can kind of marry that, you know, together. So for me personally, I'm very, very, very happy with how I have sort of set that up for myself.
So you don't feel like it doesn't have any adverse effect on your creative output?
No, I would not say that it has an effect. I mean, what it does is, you know, for a lot of people, that is their career. And when they go home, they stop. They, you know, they relax, or they go to the gym, or, you know, whatever. And so the only thing that I can kind of add to that is it fatigues me, because when my day job sort of ends, I go into my other job. And sometimes finding energy to go back into, okay, now another 8 hours of straight on work, you know, at 6 o'clock when you come home, where normally everybody is watching Netflix or whatever, that sometimes gets draining, where I just find myself, you know, lack of sleep and sometimes fatigued on that level. But again, I mean, what I have learned by doing this is having a good balance in life, because what you do then is you start to realize what your body and mind is capable of doing and how far you can go with it. So, for example, if you decide, you know, to come home and you know, have a beer every night, not implying getting drunk, but, you know, drinking, that slows you down and fatigues you. So that's maybe a luxury that I can't do, because then my output is just not guaranteed.
Okay. And if you could switch career path and become anything else, what would you go for?
I would become a pilot.
I know you have interest in aviation. So
yes.
What is it about aviation that fascinates you?
Well, I mean, as a kid, we traveled a lot with my family. We went everywhere around the globe. We went to the United States a lot as kids. So I the first time I was in an airplane, I was 3 weeks old. And ever since then, I've always been around airports and traveling everywhere, getting on planes, going here, going there. So I think that goes back to my childhood fascination, again, with technology and with high-tech sort of approaches. But with aviation, what I loved about it was I can go anywhere I want with this medium. You know, it's not a car, it's not a train, it's not a boat that has limitations. I can fly anywhere in the globe with this beautifully crafted machine that is beautiful in itself as it you know, takes off and flies away. So I think sort of in my passion for music and art and creating and going out and doing things, the aircraft has been sort of my vehicle that brought me there. So every time I interface with an aircraft, I get that sort of sense of relief and re-energizing, and you can do whatever you want. You can achieve it in a sense. So on that level, that fascinates me. And of course, you know, the technology behind it. How does it work? How does it fly? How is it being controlled? How is it, you know, what's its maximum range? What's the, you know, the payload? How much can it carry?
Are there any fun facts that you could share? Like, is it possible to make one full circle around the world in a Boeing 747?
Not without modifying it. I mean, you would probably, the main concern is fuel. I would probably have to say that you probably could not, you know, have enough fuel to stay airborne around the entire globe. But I think there are some people who have done that before using commercial aircraft by you know, having additional payload of fuel on board. But I mean, you know, it's transportation, so it has to be lucrative. So you'd rather have, you know, more paying passengers or cargo on board at a, you know, lesser distance that makes more money. in a sense.
Yeah, I always find it suspicious when I see a direct flight, I don't know, like San Francisco to maybe like Moscow or something like that. You know, that seems like, wow, that's quite a lot of... It's like half of the planet needs to be covered. But I think it's probably as far as they can go. Yeah.
He's probably, yeah. I mean, with modern aircraft, you know, obviously that has increased tremendously, right? Like it's fuel consumption has gone down aerodynamically. They have been modified, less drag, much like a car, right? You get more mileage, it's more aerodynamic. So the range certainly has increased tremendously. But on the other hand, who wants to be on a plane for 24 hours? you kind of want to break it maybe halfway.
That is true. It's good thing to keep in mind that not everyone enjoys being on the plane as much as you do.
That's
because you could go for a couple of days, just keep on bringing those drinks and the delicious food that they have on the plane.
Well, I mean, I would have to say it depends on the airline that you would take. But yes, if it's a good airline.
What are your top three airlines?
My top three airlines? Emirates, Singapore, they're definitely up there. Swiss Airlines, of course, because, Swiss Airlines for me is because it's home, right? Every time I get on board a Swiss aircraft, I feel like I'm already at home. So it's more of a connection that way. But there are certainly other airlines that are much better than Swiss is. But yeah, I would probably have to say those are my three top fave.
So what song would be the anthem of your life?
What song would be the anthem of my life?
If someone made a short documentary, a 4-minute long documentary about you, just with some cuts, some outtakes of your life highlights, what song would you play in the background?
I would have to say it is a song called Ron's Peace that is performed by Jean-Michel Jarre.
Ron's Peace.
Yes.
And if are you working on anything in terms of personal development, and what would you like to improve in your lifestyle?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with balancing myself maybe a little bit more. Maybe I'm a little bit harsh with myself, but I spend a lot of, I don't have much time, like free time for myself. And in the past couple of years by doing this, having day work and music and all that kind of stuff, I kind of want to spend a little bit more time on having free time, doing things, right? I think that's something that I would like to explore a little bit more and bring me there. In terms of personal development, I mean, life is always personal development. I'm a big fan of the term éducation permanente, which means permanent education. So, something new will fascinate me or something more interesting will come my way and I will want to do it. But I think my biggest problem is that I don't have enough time in the day to achieve that. So maybe I need to get a little bit better on my time management skills, where I can kind of say, okay, enough of that now. Now let's focus on something else. Let's, do this and now go to sleep. But it's kind of difficult to do when you do something creative, because sometimes you get into a notion of this great bass line, I like this, or this is interesting, and then you can spend hours and hours on end, and suddenly you realize it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and you go, oh, I need to go to sleep now because I need to wake up, and continue the next day.
Yeah, I can say that in my personal experience, that getting to the state of delirium, staying up late and being super tired, sometimes can get your creative juices flowing in a different way, right? You may discover something and get inspired and kind of be high on, like, get a second wind on the lack of sleep. And that's when you know that some of your more interesting works were born out of this, you're okay with it, right? You accept that non-conventional approach to your routine. Is that something you've experienced yourself?
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. And I think that's a key ingredient, especially when you make electronic music. is that you limit yourself, right? I mean, with synthesizers, you can tend to, you know, let the machine kind of take over you, where you can spend hours and hours on noodling around and you know, same sounds, whatever, but it goes nowhere. And one thing I've learned with my music partner, Mattia, and with Inhalt, is because we have limited amount of time to focus on this, we have to come to a point where we say, okay, great, stop. Great sound, good bass line, now let's continue. Not to say that we rush through things, but we do keep things at a fast pace, especially when, you know, we write the songs in our studio, record it there, but then we go to a recording studio and mix it and, you know, do the vocals and, you know, that kind of stuff. And there already you are limited in time because you're paying for the time that you're there. So you know, okay, we only have 12 hours to do this. How can we manage this efficiently where we're not wasting time by noodling around, that delay effect sounds really great. Let's spend 3 hours figuring out if it should go from left to right or right to left or up and down or, you know, no. Yeah, you listen. Okay, is it good? Perfect. Continue. Go on. So yes, I certainly have developed that in a sense, which might be sometimes maybe a little bit negative, right? I mean, a lot of, especially in electronic music, a lot of people like to kind of let themselves go, right? They go like, nah, you know, spend a couple of hours doing this. But I'm not a fan of that. I want to be efficient and fast.
I think maybe part of it is innate because the famous Swiss/German efficiency, you know, really helps in this.
Maybe, yes. I'm sure that comes to shine, yeah.
You got to play to your positive stereotypes, you know, take advantage of what people perceive you as, right? I don't think you're a typical Swiss. I've met some other Swiss people in my life, and while you maybe share some traits with them, you don't strike me as most of other Swiss people that I've met. But it's good. It's good to know your strength.
I'm going to take that as a compliment, Vasily.
It was supposed to be an insult. Insult, you see, in health.
It's exactly, yeah. It's all about perception.
See, again, you're playing to your strength. Yeah, you're a positive thinker. So in closing, I would like to ask you something that is impossible, but if it were possible, if you could give a phone call to an 18-year-old version of yourself and give them advice or any message that they can send from the future, what would you tell them?
Do less drugs. No.
Stay in school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would probably have to say, you know, be healthy, be fit. Look at your capabilities of what your body and mind can do. Many times, or at least for me, when I was a young kid, rebellious and, you know, running around and whatever. And maybe this is, you know, natural, normal, whatever, but I would go to a lot of, you know, parties and techno parties and, you know, that kind of stuff. And sometimes they would derail and, you know, I would do things that I'm not really too proud of to say today, which might have slowed me down in many ways in opportunities and whatnot. So I would have to say to my 18-year-old self, if I could, be focused and listen to your body.
And listen to good music, but that he wouldn't need to hear because he was already listening to good music, I'm sure.
I should hope so, yes.
Okay, well, thank you so much for spending this time with me. I think
absolutely.
It was an awesome inaugural introduction episode, and your passion for the things you do in life shines through, and I hope it will be an inspiration to not only those who want to make music and live in San Francisco, but also to those who want to teach German.
Yes.
And whatever inspiration people may get out of this. And so the idea behind this series is to show that you don't need to be inspired only by extremely successful people who are celebrities and top performers. And I think we have people with interesting lives and interesting lifestyles all around us, and you are a shining example of that, and I appreciate you giving me the time.
Well, I thank you very much, Vasily. That's very kind of you to put that together and giving me the opportunity to record this podcast. I hope I could inspire maybe somebody else, you know, to run with it, whatever inspires them. So thank you very much, Vasily.
Till the next time.